So while I'm a single dad, you pick up some bad habits as a single parent that don't necessarily translate very well to dating again. Like at some point, I started referring to myself in the third person as daddy. Turns out that's not that cute when you start dating. I had this woman over for dinner a couple months back and made her dinner. I'm showing off the kitchen skills. So I come out of the kitchen, I got the plates in my hand, I set them down, and then just out of habit, I start cutting up her food for her. She looks at me and says, "What are you doing?" And I've explained to her, "This knife is sharp." Daddy doesn't want you to cut yourself.
Welcome back to Predictably Drunk, smart people talking about stupid things. You just heard Matt Gubser at the top of the hour with his daddy issues, if you will. It was a funny bit from last year's San Francisco International Comedy Competition. I think that was at his performance in Santa Rosa, if I'm not mistaken. He's actually going to be joining me here in a few minutes to talk about a bunch of things. Comedy, being a dad in comedy, and everything that goes with it. Anybody who's seen my act, anybody who's listened to the show, knows that my daughter Chloe is a big part of obviously my life, but obviously my act, and just a source of a lot of material for me in terms of comedy. And Matt's, I believe, has three girls, if I'm not mistaken. So he's got what I've got times three. And it's not even times three. It's really like cubed, because I don't think it's really just a straight multiplication. Once you have more kids, I believe it's compounds more than that. But we'll talk to Matt about that. I also got a chance to try for the drunk people in the audience here on Predictably Drunk. I got a chance to try Devil's Cut whiskey by Jim Beam. It's not bad if you don't know what Devil's Cut is. So whenever you brew bourbon, about 40% of it burns off over 4 years when it's in the barrel, and that's called the angel share, right? It evaporates to the angels. And then there's another certain percentage that actually gets soaked into the barrel itself, and that's called the devil's cut. So Jim Beam got smart and decided to market a new type of bourbon called the devil's cut, which they extract it from the actual barrel itself and sell you the same stuff that's in the barrel, but for an extra $4 or $5 a bottle. So my advice to you, it's not bad if you like Jim Beam. It's not worth the extra couple of bucks if you're out at the bar. But if you want to try it, just to try it, because it's got a cool name, go for it. Also want to say big shout out to my sister Summer, who just moved back from Europe and got me like kegs of beer, actually, which, she's now my favorite sister. So fuck you, Stacy. You don't get me kegs of beer. Summer is now the new number one sister. And then also for the sports nuts in there, I know you guys are probably looking forward to the football show. Jeremy Curry and myself have been filming a lot of stuff. I've been wearing earphones, obviously. When you're around Jeremy Curry, you need to do that. But we've got some stuff coming up here for the football season. And speaking of sports, I just went and saw my Los Angeles Dodgers lose two in a row to the last place Oakland Athletics, which, way to go, Dodgers. Way to make me proud, like the one time you come to Oakland. But it was cool. It was worth it. Thank you to the Oakland A's for the free tickets. And also thank you to my daughter, who allowed me to watch about four pitches of the entire series as she experienced her first Oakland A's game and immediately started crying because she was in Oakland. No offense to Matt, who's sitting here in the studio and lives in Oakland. But it was a good time, but it was a little bit hard. It's hard. She's 2.5, Matt. And it's hard to take her to an event like a baseball game and see if she can actually enjoy it for being a baseball game. I think we got about an inning and a half before she started looking around going, okay, now what?
Yeah, so I took my youngest daughter to a River Cats game up in Sacramento a couple of years ago. She was probably 6 at the time, and that was tough.
But see, 6 there, I mean, at that point, the personality's out. Hers is starting to come out at 2.5. Yeah. But it seems... Very short attention span. Not a whole lot you can get out of them. You do have to. I think minor league teams, actually, like the River Cats, probably do a pretty good job of trying to keep the younger members in attendance satisfied, right? There's mascots, there's games, there's stuff going on. So maybe I need to try that. Maybe I need to ease her just like a baseball player from the minor leagues to the professionals to the majors when it comes to...
Start her on the San Jose Giants.
Yeah, we'll start on the San Jose Giants and then work our way up from there if she shows some promise. You know, we'll move up from there. But so you have three daughters, right?
Yeah.
And you've been doing comedy for their entire lives, or did you start after...
No, I my oldest daughter is 15, and I've been doing comedy for 7 years.
So how did that get started? I mean, were you okay? Obviously, at that point, you have an 8-year-old daughter, mm-hmm. and then you kind of have this drastic lifestyle change where you're going to be out late at night, you know, doing shows, writing jokes, making appearances, performances, things of that nature. How did that come about?
Well, I don't think that I realized the time demands required for comedy when I first started. I had an 8-year-old, a 6-year-old, and a 2-year-old. And at the time, a wife working in Silicon Valley, so she's working like 90-hour weeks.
Yeah.
I couldn't get out of the house. I did my first year of comedy, I had comedy once a week because that was all.
That was your social life.
Yeah, that's all I could do.
and if you've listened to this show, or if you've talked to me in person, or if you heard my podcast appearances, that's almost exactly why I started comedy. One of the major reasons was once I had my daughter, my social life just went away. I mean, people kind of look at you in a way. Your friends that don't have kids look at you like you just caught some sort of STD, right? And they don't want to be around you anymore because they think it's contagious. And the demands of being a father or a parent are just what they are. They're the demands that you have to do. Yeah. I used to go out. I used to drink. I used to have, a little bit of a social life where I go out and entertain my friends and meet new people. And that all went away. Mm-hmm. So for me, on some level, it was an excuse to say, okay, I need to get out and see something other than the inside of my house.
Talk to an adult.
Yeah. Talk to an adult. Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, I've watched a lot of your stuff. We've shared the stage one time, which I want to talk about at some point here today. But your kids seem like they're a huge part of your act. I mean, I was watching a 10-minute bit of yours the other day, and I would say about half of it was all pretty much just you being a father. Is that continuing, or do you see yourself kind of going away from that, or are they just a constant source of inspiration?
You got to talk about your life.
Yeah.
I mean, that's especially now. I mean, that's really, it feels like comedically that's the only material that we have real control over is the autobiographical stuff.
It's the best way to make sure that you're not accidentally stealing a joke from somebody or lifting a bit that somebody else may have already done. I mean, if you're doing, and I'm sure you can expand on this, but if you're doing, and you do a lot of social, you know, we follow each other on social media, and you do a lot of very intelligent jokes about things that are going on in society right now. I remember I like reading your posts. I like reading those types of things because, you know, it's not just the common denominator, lowest common factor. And when it comes to a joke about, let's say, Jared Fogle from Subway, I mean, you have a more of an intellectual take on it. But when you're dealing with that type of humor, it seems like it doesn't take much for somebody to claim that you stole something, because we all kind of, as comedians, have a type of mentality of let's get the punchline. And there's only so many punchlines for a hot topic out there on any given day.
Yeah,
right?
If I come up with some short wordplay thing, now I'll do a search for it in Twitter first and be like, oh, 11 people already did that joke. Okay, I guess I should quit comedy.
I wasn't going to ask you about this, but how has social media, because you started 7-8 years ago, social media was a thing, but it's not what it is today.
I had a MySpace page.
Yeah.
In 2008. It's not that long ago.
It's not. But
Facebook was not really anything.
It was just getting started. And Twitter, you have Facebook. Exist. Twitter wasn't there.
I don't think YouTube existed in 2000. Maybe.
It might have just been starting. It's nowhere. The point is, it's nowhere near what it is today.
Yeah.
And, you know, I kind of jokingly put on my Twitter as my profile, sit down comedian, because there's so many people out there with picture memes, and just every time something hits, anything trends, you get, like you said, you know, within minutes, you've got dozens of people with sometimes funny one-liners. But how does that change you as a stand-up comic? Because that's a lot of information out there that you can't necessarily use or create at that point.
I think that you really have to go with strengths, focus on the different strengths of the medium that you're using. Like for me, I'm way better at Facebook than I am on Twitter.
I agree. I'm the same way.
Like if you're a quick one-liner comic, you're doing a lot of wordplay kind of stuff, like you can build a career out of developing a solid Twitter following.
People have. Rob Delaney, I think, his entire career is based on how well he's done on Twitter. And now he's, you know, a stand-up comic and one of the top names out there.
Yeah, I can't be that concise generally. Like every once in a while I'll come up with something. But
you're a victim of your own success in terms of being a smart person. How dare you?
I don't know about that.
Matt, ladies and gentlemen, is being very humble right now. He's I hang out with a lot of dirtbag comics.
Smarter, I figure out how to make the joke shorter.
Well, there's different types of smarts, but I'll say this. If I'm listening to you and I'm listening to Jeremy Curry talk about the same topics, there's going to be about, I would say, a huge drop-off in the amount of fags and fucks that are going to be coming out of your set versus his. We'll put it that way.
Probably.
Yeah.
But I curse a lot in real life. I curse more in person than I do on stage.
Yeah, I was going to say, you don't really curse a lot on stage. Is that a premeditated thing, or is it just how it is?
You know what I've noticed is that when I'm working out new material, I'm much more likely to curse. Because it's a quick shortcut to really add emphasis when the punchlines aren't there yet.
You're absolutely right.
But at the same time, if you can get the same point across without throwing an F-bomb in the middle of it,
it's a good joke at that point, right? Yeah, it's good material.
You think of where the money is in comedy. It's in colleges, it's in corporate events. And if you can do the same joke and it's clean and it doesn't lose any of its essence, then you're severely limiting your opportunity to be successful and professional comedian.
I think if I were to go back and watch my first set versus what I do now, and let's just say the same amount of time, it will be a severely different atmosphere in terms of the amount of swearing I did. It was Portland Metro Radio. They're an online radio service, but they wanted to use some of my bits for just, as bumpers and everything else. I said, sure. So I sent them a couple of clips and they wrote back and said, yeah, this is radio. You can't have swearing. I'm like, oh, I didn't know I'd swore on that. So I went back and I had to edit it. And within a 2-minute clip, I had 8 F-bombs and like three shits, if you will. So I had to go through and, either cut things out. And I found I could actually take those out in post, post editing. I think I had to leave 2 F-bombs in there for the sake of the joke.
Yeah.
But the other 6 were just superfluous. I didn't need them. And that was like an eye-opening experience for me just to kind of listen to my own stuff and go, well, I'm using a swear bridge right here that I don't really need to do.
Verbal filler.
Exactly.
Because it's easy.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with cursing on stage. I mean, but this is one time at Pepper Bellies, the open mic, the club that burned down.
Field.
Yeah. That was my home club. There's this guy. It's the end of an open mic. And so we're all just kind of bullshitting in the back of the room. This guy's on stage. And he says motherfucker like 6 times in the first 2 sentences. So we just started counting. It's 5 minutes set. 55 motherfuckers.
55 motherfuckers in a 5-minute set. That's 11 motherfuckers a minute, if I'm not mistaken.
That's one every 5.5 seconds.
Wow. How do you have time for a joke if that's the case?
Exactly. There's nothing there.
It's just swearing. Wow. Well, that motherfucker hopefully has gotten better. You're listening to Predictably Drunk, the podcast. This is Sam Marcoux. I'm here with Matt Gubser. This is Smart People Talking About Stupid Things. I have to say the tagline every time in order to keep a trademark thing. It's nonsense, but I have to say it. If you don't say it, then somebody can come and take it. It's this weird legal nonsense that you have to do.
Somebody already tweeted that.
Yeah. So I did look and see if any smart people were talking about stupid things. So Matt, beyond being a stand-up, you are probably one of the, I would say, most revered comics in the Bay Area, not just for your comedy, but because of what you do for all the comedians here in the Bay Area.
It's just for putting up.
You're in my studio. I'm trying to be nice. No, you're a very good comic. But what you do, so I've talked about it on here. It's a part of my daily routine. Mm-hmm. But there's a group called Bacon, Bay Area Comedy Network, and you run that. You are the Bay Area Comedy Network, and what it is, I'll let you kind of explain it more accurately than what I can, but basically every open mic that's going on in Northern California, more or less, it's a little bit beyond just the Bay Area.
Well, it's mostly the Bay Area.
You go into Monterey, and that's a different Bay Area.
Yeah, kind of.
Sorry, Corey Robinson.
Yeah, but we basically cover everything from, we don't really cover the San Joaquin Valley.
Sure.
We don't cover the Stockton shows or the Sacramento.
Sorry, Rick James.
Yeah, basically North Bay up toward, Solano County is going to be out east towards Pittsburgh and then the south, Santa Cruz and Monterey.
But it's every open mic, every show that's going on, paid or free, you collect the data every single day and put it out there for the comics to know what's going on in the comedic community here in the Bay Area. And there's a lot going on in the Bay Area, so it's impressive that you put that together.
Well, we don't do it daily anymore. The lists are still up.
Well, the lists are still up for on your Tumblr page and things of that nature. Oh, well, I don't know. I check it pretty much daily. So.
Yeah, so there's a list of everything happened. Like every show that happens on Mondays is listed.
Yeah.
But yeah, I put it up every day for a couple of years. I stopped when I was out of the country for a few weeks this summer.
Was it a nice vacation from having to do that? I mean, what are the stresses beyond just collecting it? I mean, do you get comedians that are mad at you if you happen to overlook one of their shows or if there's a special event that you're not? I mean, do people get pissed off at you for not putting it on the list?
Yeah, I think there's some people who took it personally. And it's
really?
Never been personal.
I can't imagine it would be.
Yeah, I was actively trying to get 100% of everything on there. But there would be days where I would miss a couple shows because, you know, comics are so terrible at
At life in general. Okay, I want to talk.
Oh, yeah, I have a monthly show. You've known it's going to happen for a month. You had your lineup for 2 months, and then you're going to post that afternoon. Like, yeah. Hey, here's the flyer for my show tonight.
I'm a big opponent of comedians in the Bay Area in terms of how they go to market. And it goes back to the social networking thing where I think a lot of comedians feel like if I post about it one time on Facebook, I've done my job in terms of promoting the show, which, okay, great. That's a good thing that you did that. But God, you got to do so much more, especially in this environment, especially in the Bay Area where you have so many shows and so many options outside of comedy to get people to a show. To get people to a show, sit down, listen to you talk about whatever you want to talk about. And in some cases, then be, you know, ballsy enough to say, can I please get tips? Or, you know, yeah. You get charged up front and then come sit down. That's tough. And a lot of guys and girls don't know how to do that. They just do it. They throw one link up there and say, okay, I don't understand why I got three people to my show.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, especially as a comedian, because you want it to be just about jokes.
Yeah.
But if you're trying to do this as your job, you're not in comedy. You're in the comedy business.
Absolutely right. 100% right. There's a business side to being funny. And I think a lot of comics, I was talking about this the other day with Kabir Singh over at Tommy T's in Pleasanton. And we were talking about it seems like a lot of comedians, and this isn't L.A. This is San Francisco, which is, you know, really not that far from L.A. But at the same time, it's a huge way away from L.A. in terms of attitude, in terms of the people in the audience.
Yeah, comedy was, you know, San Francisco's AAA and L.A.'s a major league city.
And
LA, New York, basically.
Yeah, and it seems to me like, and a lot of comics just, you know, hey, if I do great tonight, maybe there'll be somebody in the audience. They're waiting to get plucked out of obscurity and dropped onto a sitcom, and that's not going to happen
anymore.
It doesn't
happen.
No.
That was the business model in the 80s.
Yeah.
It's like you do well in front of somebody, and then you go to Montreal to just relax,
yep.
And then you sign your $200,000 development deal with NBC or whoever. That doesn't happen. Networks are not pulling people out of obscurity. Networks are grabbing people who have already
have a
done
following.
Their own thing, who
yeah.
have already built something themselves.
Because they don't need to bank on a 50% chance, let's even say. They want something that's going to be a little bit more in their favor. And
exactly.
Think, this guy's got a following, and this girl's got a following, and she's funny, and she can move the dot. She can say, I'm going to be here, and people are going to show up. That's more of a guarantee, and that's what they're looking for. So, yeah, you do have to have that, you know,
yeah, it's not
business mentality.
They're not developing talent. All they're doing is taking talent that's already established itself and putting it in front of a larger audience.
Yeah,
that's what's happening now.
So, Matt Gubbs, are you your new CD is coming out September or possibly October, based on your teaser?
Probably September.
September.
Yeah, September's pretty close. That's like 2 weeks away.
And this is the name of this is called Daddy's Issues, right?
Daddy Issues.
Daddy Issues, and this was recorded where?
I did this at Doc's Lab in San Francisco.
Back in April?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got to tell you, if you guys haven't seen it, I'll see if you're okay with it. I might share it on my Facebook. You released like the first 2 minutes or the first minute of
it's
the special.
It's just the intro.
And it's awesome. That's a great intro. It makes everything I do with my green screen and everything that I'm recording look like dog shit. So I appreciate you making me feel bad about myself.
You know, blame it on William Head. William Head, he's a North Bay comic, and he's also big in the video. He's a filmmaker.
It was great.
He was my DP, so he did a fantastic job.
That was great. And I love the title.
So cool.
I mean, Daddy Issues, especially if you listen to this, you heard the first minute of the show, you heard Matt's, you know, issues with talking about himself in third person as Daddy, which is something, first time I heard that, I laughed my ass off because I do the exact same thing.
That is, before I ever did that on stage, that was a joke that I wrote for my OKCupid profile.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So you're using social media to a whole new level. OKCupid.
That was.
Well, it's a good joke. All right, so recording your CD, what was actually the hardest part of it? Was it the logistics of the audio and the video, or getting people there, or just nerves?
This was actually my second attempt at recording it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I made most of my mistakes with the first one.
That's nice. No, I think that's great. It's like a rough draft, and you go, okay, I like this, I didn't like this, come up with a better.
It was an expensive rough draft.
So you're footing the bill for renting the space and getting people
so
there?
So we did actually, after the first time I did it, I recorded in Humboldt County, a couple hundred miles north of San Francisco, up on the coast. Rented out the theater, had to get insurance for the events, hired a bunch of local camera guys who were recommended by friends. I thought we were going to be okay because we had some radio. I wrote some for Savage Henry magazine, and so they gave me a couple full page ads.
Wow.
There's a newspaper article written on the show by another comedian up there who also has a weekly column. And we flyered the whole area. I thought we were going to be all right.
Right.
250 seat theater. We got 90.
90's good, but if you're in a 250, it doesn't look great.
It's a high ceiling theater.
Okay, so the noise just
it was not enough, and I thought that we would easily get 150 and have a decent shot at selling out, but there were just a number of things that conspired against us.
Yeah,
and I spent probably 6 months trying to edit it, trying to polish that turd.
Just couldn't make it happen.
Well, it was. Okay, one, the crowd turnout was not great, which is not their fault. That one's on me. Yeah, I tried to do it too soon. I recorded at the end of 2012. I recorded my EP. It's on my website called Hilarious Things. I recorded like 45 minutes. I ended up cutting it down to like 30. But that's the time where like Bill Burr was putting out a new album every year. Louis C.K. was putting out a new album every year. I'm like, oh, that's how real comedians do it. They generate all this new material. So I thought, okay, I'm going to do a new hour in a year. And I'm not that good.
That's a rare bird that could just throw out an hour and then say, I'm going to do a new hour the next year. I mean, that's tough.
I did 65 at the recording, but there was about probably 20 minutes that was just not that strong.
Right.
It was just there to have an hour.
Sure.
And it wasn't a good hour. So I ended up, after messing around with that for forever and getting more discouraged every day, trying to turn it into something that it wasn't, I reached a point where I said, I can't. This isn't good.
Wow.
And then I decided to redo it in a small docks. It seats 90 people, or 90 or 100 somewhere. We were pretty close to full.
Yeah.
I think we were like 95% full, something like that.
Well, that makes such a better environment for you as a comic, too,
absolutely.
Right?
90 people in a place that seats 100 people is so much better than 90 people in a place that seats 250.
Yeah.
So much better.
Yeah, we did Abel Jaramillo put on a show in January, and it was a 250-seater in Fremont, and we sold it out, and it was a great environment. We went back in April, which was probably too soon to go back to the same location and try to do a big event. Mm-hmm. Had a great lineup. Chris Storin, Butch Escobar, Kabir Singh.
A strong lineup.
Very strong. I call it, Christopher John was there. Charles Kelly was there. And I call it the best show that nobody saw, because it was the same venue and we probably had about 50 people, which if you're in a smaller venue, 50 people with that lineup is an amazing night.
Yeah.
But 50 people in an area that seats 250, and all of a sudden it's just, don't know what happened. Nobody showed up. Like you said, it was on us. We didn't get the people there, but my God, it was like, what a great show it could have been.
No kidding.
But
that's the thing about theaters, or you get big spaces and when they're full, they're amazing. And when they're not, where I started in Pepperbelly's in the big room, it was an old movie theater.
Yeah.
So it's just this long, high ceiling, rectangular room, and that sat like 275, and if there were less than 100 people in there, it was just this empty cavern.
It was noticeable, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, the album's called Daddy Issues. Mm-hmm. How are people going to get that? Are you releasing hard copies? Is this going out to iTunes and people can purchase it there?
It's going to be available on my website.
Okay.
Then, it'll be on Amazon and iTunes and everywhere else, and I'll have physical copies that I'll be selling after shows.
Good.
I think that was one of the big things. The money is really hard on the road.
Yeah.
If you're not someone who's not just good as a comic, but has
a name,
multiple television appearances.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to make decent money going on the road.
I agree with you.
Until you've put in the decade or two building up that audience generally.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. I mean, I think I've done shows in other states, and, the money is great. Anytime you can get money to tell dick jokes, as I say. But, it's not enough to feed a monster pizza when she wants pizza in the afternoon.
Yeah, and if you can sell 10 or 20 DVDs after the show, that changes things a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
Covers your gas, covers your
hotel. Absolutely. You know, it becomes a worthwhile trip financially,
yeah.
You know, not just artistically. But so have your kids seen your act, the oldest maybe?
Yeah, there were a couple times that they had to come to shows with me when they were littler.
Yeah.
Just because their mom wouldn't get home in time. Like, I got to take them with me. You have to pick them up at the club. So they were just hanging out in the green room and eating terrible fried food.
Yeah, the best comedy food out there, right? Yeah. Fried everything.
I would try to keep them away from the stage where they would be listening to...
The worst stuff. The motherfucker 55 times in a 5-minute set.
Yeah, exactly. Try to keep them out of your shot and keep them occupied.
Yeah, it's different as a comic and having a kid. I mean, I actually wrote down, I don't know if you have them, but I wrote down like the top three things that I hate about being a parent with relation to being, I guess, a comic. But... You know, one of the ones that I absolutely loathe, and it's more so now than when she was born, but having to buy and rebuy everything that I already previously owned because my kid will throw things, knock things down, eat things she's not supposed to, and generally just destroy anything I've ever purchased in my life. It doesn't matter whether it's cheap or is it expensive. Anytime I buy something now, I definitely have something in my head that says, I have to buy this again. I'm going to buy two of these and I'm going to hide one because she's just going to destroy it. And that's just inevitable with children, I find.
Yeah, the hood of my car is all scratched up from one morning that I don't know how old she was, probably 8 or 9 at the time, decided to scrape the ice off of my car with a shovel.
And it's such a sweet gesture.
I know. It was a sweet. You can't even be mad. I'm just like, honey, you gotta be careful because of my whole script with the paint. But thank you so much for cleaning my car.
Thank you very much. You're grounded forever. You owe me a car when you get older. Well, yeah, it's just inevitable if you have children that things are going to go to shit at some point.
But I did the same thing. I broke so many windows when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Playing baseball mostly. It was one that we had a wood-burning stove and we had a wood pile by our front door. And one time I set some wood through the front window. Just
why not?
Yeah, not on purpose.
So it is. It is karma, right? You know, it's just one of those things where, hey, like, it's all going to come back to you at some point.
Children destroy everything.
Yeah, I live in San Jose, and I get my car broken into every now and then. And it's hard for me to get mad because I remember as a youthful punk idiot, I used to do stupid shit like that all the time. Mm-hmm. So every time my shit gets jacked, I'm kind of like, I probably had it coming on some level. So it's same sort of karma. You know what else I hate? I get this a lot. I think it gets better as they get older. But one of the things that skeeves me out about having children is that there's just an unknown wetness factor that's going on just about at all times. It's so gross, though. Like, I don't know whether it's water or spit or snot or just some other substance that she's spilled and is now... I mean, it's like in the couch. It's on my face. It's so gross. Like, if I knew it was... it's hard to be crass, but if I knew it was like poo, at least, okay, I know how to deal with poo. Or if I knew it was... You know, apple juice. I know how to clean apple juice. But when I don't know what it is, I feel like I just got slimed. I have no idea what's going on. It's a terrifying feeling.
Having you get peed on enough, you don't even think about it.
Oh, well, see, again, but if I, it's the fear of the unknown.
My tolerance for being disgusted by bodily fluids is much higher than it would be than if I was not.
I will say parents have that ability beyond, although like your kids, if your kids peed on me, it would be way grosser than if my kid peed on me. Like there's a certain biological thing that says, you know, my kids only allowed.
This one time, they had this one week, they all passed around this stomach flu. So they're all it's just diarrhea and vomit just constantly. And it's like 2 a.m. and my kid's crying. So I go in and she's throwing up, sitting there with a bowl and holding her hair back, and she's throwing up into the bowl, and she's got puke all over her pajamas. So she finishes. I'm like, okay, let's get these pajamas off. Let's get you showered and cleaned up. And I set the bowl down and reach over to help her get out of her puked on pajamas. And I spilled the bowl on my leg. And that was...
Matt, I could have gone my whole life without knowing that story. That's the worst thing.
Vomits just running down my leg. And I think that was the most fun I've had with bodily fluids.
Do you immediately just try to put your kids up for adoption at that point, even though it's not their fault? You're just like, I don't need to deal with this. I'm a funny, smart man. I have puke running down my leg. What happened? I took a wrong turn in Albuquerque somewhere. So, and then the worst thing for me, and I don't know if you feel this way, and I think a lot of parents have this, so this isn't anything groundbreaking, but it's that sound of silence, and it terrifies me more than anything else, because the one thing I've learned is once I've had a child, there's absolutely no such thing as a quiet time, even when they're sleeping, because when they're sleeping, that's when you do your laundry, that's when you clean, that's when you vacuum, that's when you do all this other stuff. There's always a TV on, there's always a humming or a hissing or a crying or a whining. There's never any quiet time until you, you know, drink all your whiskey at night and pass out. But there are certain pockets where the silence is deafening and it's just stone cold silent. And I know that something bad is about to happen. Either she's going to break something or she's going to break herself. And then there's going to be a calamity of noises coming out of this child at some point that I'm going to have to deal with. So anytime it's just silent beyond a brief, you know, 1 or 2 seconds, I know that shit is about to happen. And that's the most terrifying thing about being a parent for me.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that suspicious silence when the girls are not fighting.
Yeah. What are you doing wrong? Even if they're just sitting there, you know, looking at each other. No, don't make a noise. Yeah. So, well, this is Predictably Dropped, a podcast, Smart People Talking About Stupid Things, Sam Marcoux, Matt Gubzer. You got any shows coming up in late August, September, anything going on that you want to promote? Or I think you had something coming up in September, but I don't know.
Yeah, I'm at the Punchline in San Francisco with Scott Capro the first weekend of September.
Beautiful.
It's gonna be good. I'm running a new show in Vallejo.
Excellent.
At the Empress Theater. So we got our first one is September 18th.
That's a Friday, correct?
Yeah. Bring down Emmett Montgomery from Seattle. He was Seattle Weekly's best comedian. He was on this year's this season of Last Comic Standing.
Okay, great.
So we got him in. It's going to be in Vallejo that Friday. We're doing a show in Crate Place with George Kane in Santa Cruz that Thursday. At Doc's Lab that Wednesday. That's all mid-September. And then I'm going up to Ukiah to do some stuff.
You love Humboldt County. You're up there quite a bit, huh?
You know, Humboldt has a unique connection to the San Francisco comedy scene. It's this cool place. It's a one of a kind place. And even though it's, you know, just a couple small towns, Savage Henry Magazine is there. And Tony Persico, when he was running shows, was doing a great job with his stuff up there.
Well,
it's a sort of a mini vacation.
Yeah.
Just because it's definitely has another world from being in the Bay Area.
It's definitely...
there's a lot of back and forth.
Yeah. I mean, if you get up to Eureka, if you like steak, there's a great place. You would never know it's a steak shop, but it's called the Double A Steak Room. It looks like a bar.
Yeah,
it is a bar.
It doesn't sound like a steak shop.
No, it doesn't at all, but it is. It's not. It's all on the up and up, but it's right on the main drag there. If you happen to get back up, it's almost right next door to the Lost Coast Brewery.
Every business in Humboldt County is just for money.
Cash only. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we all know what keeps the economy going up there for sure. And it's not steak.
It'll be interesting to see what happens when marijuana is legalized in California.
At this point, isn't it, though? I mean, I know technically it's probably not, but people aren't getting stopped and harassed unless you're carrying around like Leon Lett in the Dallas Cowboy days and you've got like, you know, vans of pot. People are just out there. I think my neighbors are like getting high every single night, you know, like nobody cares, it seems like.
Yeah.
You know?
I think Humboldt will eventually become like the Napa of marijuana.
You think they'll go on like weed tasting tours?
Yeah, I think so.
That's a great business. I'd never thought about that.
Like if everyone else is producing marijuana too, I think they're going to really have to hit the tourist angle.
I think you're right. That's a great, somebody's going to be thinking up there if they get that going. Again, this is Sam Marcoux. You can catch me, actually, speaking of new rooms, you got a new room coming up in Vallejo, new show. But Sammy Meeker, who's been a guest on the show, Russell City Sports Bar and Grill in Hayward on Clawater Avenue next Wednesday, or this Wednesday, I guess, by the time you listen to this. I'll be there along with Sam Meeker and Phil Griffith. So it's going to be a nice show. Check that out. That's free. And then next Thursday, or 2 days after this has been posted, I'll be hosting at Cobb's Comedy Club with in San Francisco with Kabir Singh. And Chelsea Bierce. In fact, I think Chelsea and I are going to try to do a podcast in the green room there and kind of have a unique experience there. So check me out on those dates. You can also go to sammarcoux.com and check out all the dates on there. Check out any of the old podcasts. You can check out the porn star, the very controversial porn star episode from last week. I got a lot of opinions from women who listen to the show about his specific thoughts on certain types of people. You can go to mattgubzer.com and check out all of his tour dates and everything coming up with his CD called Daddy Issues. And Matt, thank you very much for coming in here today. Speaking of kids, we had to do this. It's a little bit different. I usually do this podcast at night. We usually have a couple of adult beverages going on, and we wax poetic about the comedy scene. We're actually doing this in the middle of the day. Why? because of children.
Gotta pick up the kids.
Gotta pick up kids from school. So this is just another way of how it affects your life. You gotta adjust your entire schedule around how kids work. So thank you very much for the flexibility and being here. And good luck to you and everything going forward. I'm looking forward to that CD when it comes out. Thanks. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Appreciate it.
All right, yeah, thanks.
I'll send you a copy. You can give away your listeners.
I'd love to. Yeah, we'll do a contest. This is one of the smart... It's not these morons that I hang out with, ladies and gentlemen, okay? This isn't, you know, Jeremy Curry. This isn't Kabir Singh. This isn't Abel Hatamio. It's not Rick James. No, we don't love Jeremy. We love to hate. No, I love Jeremy Curry. Jeremy's one of my best friends in life, let alone comedy, but he is a loud motherfucker.
Yes, he is.
That's a guy you can say motherfucker, you know, 55 times in a 5-minute set right there. But thank you very much. This is Predictably Drunk, Smart People Talking About Stupid Things. We'll see you guys next time.